Everyone, thank you for joining us for the Mac Show today. As you can tell, I am not Ewan Rankin because I am not nearly as beautiful as he is. I am Jeff Gamet, and I am so happy to be at the head of this train wreck today. I mean, the show today. And we have an absolutely awesome panel that by their mere presence is going to make me look good and professional. So going down the line, Callum, how are you today?
I'm very good. I'm very hot, but I'm very good.
We already knew you were hot.
Hot both in that way and in terms of temperature. So, we've hit about 32 degrees C over here, which is about 90. Even despite that, it's still forecast to rain later, obviously. Very, very warm over here and very, very muggy and very close as well.
Thank you for being here. And
pleasure as always.
Yeah, this is awesome. All right. Chuck Joyner, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeff, but I have to disagree a little. You're going to have to work hard to make this show the train wreck that last week's show was.
So, challenge accepted.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you're up for it.
Yeah, if anyone can take this train off the rails at high speed, I'm the guy for it. And Adam Christensen. Adam, I feel like it's been forever since we've seen each other.
They found me under a rock and I crawled out from under it. Yeah.
just in time for this. I am so, so sorry.
Yeah, I think this train wreck might be in some ways my fault.
Okay. Adam, I am so disappointed in you.
I think I started it. I think. Because I sent a text yesterday, you know, mentioning that I was available and suddenly.
And now here
I think
we are.
You got a call. Yeah.
And Doc Rock, you are beautiful as always.
Thank you. Thank you. And Adam, no, it's not your fault because we still would have been on Zoom. And so don't make Jeff feel good.
Don't give him an out.
No. No, too late. Adam already took responsibility.
We got time.
Welcome back, Adam.
Thank you.
Yeah, Adam, I am kind of sorry that this is your first show back. I'm not sorry you're back, but that is the show. And Patrice, how are you doing today?
It's kind of melting, I want to say. It's like 92, 93 degrees here. It's super humid. I went outside with the dog earlier and it was too hot for all of us.
That's plenty hot.
Yep. Yeah. I've had a bit of a week. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. This is the end of the week. Sometimes I forget what day it is because we are living in a time where the arbitrary construct of days, weeks, hours, and minutes is just completely falling apart for me.
Oh, that's true. But I mean, you know, Friday is always manageable. So that's the only constant that we still.
That's true. That's true. So we might as well just hop into some of these stories. Apple made it easy for us this week because they kind of generated all the news for us. First up, we have the earnings report. So that was yesterday. And here we are in the middle of a pandemic where sales just across the board for all markets seem to be declining. And Apple had another record-breaking quarter. And because I needed to impress Callum, I actually have some notes. $59.7 billion in revenue, an 11% increase year over year for the quarter, and $2.58 earnings per diluted share, and international sales accounted for 60% of the quarter revenue. And take it away. Let me know what everyone thinks.
People need machines.
I was going to say there was a lot of knee-jerk reactions to Two things that I see off the board, machines, because you had really old home computer maybe for, you know, using your Zoom and your WebEx and Cisco and all of that. You had something that couldn't run. And I think the other one would probably be same with iPads, right? You have a lot of people that, you know, hadn't bought one since, like, you know, Air, and, you know, they needed something that they can do their work from home with. So I think somewhere between new MacBooks and MacBook Pros, iMacs and the like, and of course, something that I'm a part of, the streaming boom is just pure insanity right now. Camlinks finally came back in stock after 4.5 months, almost 5 months, and they are rapidly ripping off the shelves as well. So I think that just from anecdotally in our streaming group, we get comment every day like, hey, I need a new Mac, what should I be getting? And you know, myself and Victor are always telling people to buy iMac for this particular
class. It's something that Apple didn't even expect. Like, nobody expected that. Like, in April, when they were giving guidance, they were not giving guidance, because they said, we don't know how this is going to end. They were like, okay, it's looking okay, but we don't know. And even the most, like, optimistic pundits were like, way off base on what actually came out. Nobody really expected that. And it was, like, very interesting. I listened to the recording after the fact, and Apple basically said.
More preparation than I did then.
Yeah, I always do that. Like, it's super interesting. Apple basically said in the beginning it didn't look too good, and they like in April they had some issues, and then all of a sudden everything picked up, and they had basically the best in some areas, even the best quarter ever. Which I said they had issues with, like, supply for Macs especially, and Macs and iPads, and had to catch up with that. So they're not giving a guidance again, so we'll see how the next couple of months go, but so far they're doing good.
I think it's going to go pretty well. You can't discount EDU either, you know, as a parent with kids and knowing what's going on with schools, right?
Yeah.
iPads are becoming important. Computers are becoming important because kids aren't going to be going back to school the same way, and a lot of it's going to be remote. So same thing. You need new machines or extra machines. That's the other thing, is I bet you a lot of people are buying additional machines because you don't need one just for the parents. You need one for the kids. And yeah. And so people are looking at that stuff.
Yeah. The housekeeping Mac.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly the thing we've seen. I'd say probably our two most popular things since we started back early May, was the upgrades for older machines, so doing a lot of SSD upgrades and RAM upgrades, and the sales of iPads. They've probably been our two most popular items since we got back. So it's certainly very, very consistent with that. And we're finding a lot of people are, you know, after either newer machines or upgraded machines for themselves, and then they're looking for other stuff for kids doing homework and stuff like that. So we are seeing a lot of that ourselves. So.
Well, the other thing that's happening too, and I think this maybe is why it didn't look good at the start and then finished up strong, and I think it'll continue to go strong, is that right now there seems to be no end in sight. You know, everybody's, well, we'll be back in a few weeks. Well, we'll be back in a couple months. And now it's push out, push out, push out. And so people are saying, you know, I'm either tired of just compromising and working with what I have, or I have to have something that is better than what I have now if we're going to do this long term. So this feels like potentially a good strong period for Apple, for a lot of hardware makers, but especially for Apple.
Yeah. You know, one more thing to add before we jet is you got to remember now they changed the card so that there was a little bit of better program for picking up new Macs, right? So that opened up some space for people who may have been a little worried about it. And they're like, you know what? My advisor yesterday told me, yeah, don't worry about paying down debt right now. Keep as much cash on hand as possible. So when Apple says, let's open up the card and then, you know, expand limits, then that gives some people an opportunity to go and buy a machine. And, you know, you do have that first year sort of interest-free or whatever. And then the last thing, I think that once you start doing a lot more work in that from home, a service that probably ticked up has been iCloud storage space. And again, anecdotally, I had a bunch of people asking me, is it worth doing that or sticking with Dropbox, whatever. And I'm like, no, at this point now, just pay them the $100 a year for the 2 terabytes. Like it's one, hey, it's still one of the best deals in the game, but just the integration is incredible.
Mm. I mean, only in the US though, like they're not doing that internationally. Only in the US you have the 12 months payment terms, or I think even 6 months for certain other devices. Yeah. One interesting thing was that Apple actually pre-announced that they're not gonna ship new iPhones or like not in any major way this quarter.
Right. Yeah, they announced that that the next iPhone will be delayed. Mm-hmm. And now I can't remember, did they say a few weeks or a few months?
They didn't say specifically, they just said not that quarter, which is like typically in this now, the June quarter, they would have, or actually September quarter, they would have like at the tail end of September, yep. They would have the first iPhones. Not much, it usually doesn't make a major impact, but it does have an impact. And they're saying this is not going to happen this time.
So are we looking at, and I know this is all speculation because Apple has not said anything. So are we looking at iPhones in time for Thanksgiving, meaning we hit our Black Friday sales, mm-hmm. or are we looking at a crunch where Apple hopes to have new iPhones out by Christmas or the end of the year?
It's October.
I think it's October, November. Yeah, you're going to be seeing.
It says point blank, October. It says the iPhone 12 lineup in October.
On Apple's site or press release?
On Julie Culver's article on Mac Rumors.
Oh, that's a rumor still. I mean, it's still speculation.
No, I don't think so. It said.
From what I remember from the call, they didn't specify exactly. They just said later, the next quarter.
It said which later most likely, few weeks.
Yeah, which, I mean, few weeks can be, like a lot of things, can be October,
yeah.
Can be November.
Yeah, true.
You're talking about Apple language a few weeks.
Yeah.
Well, but though, you also have to remember, though, with retail, like, you don't want to be in the Christmas without getting your product out by Halloween.
Yeah. I would.
Yeah.
So if you go by iPads, October 27th to 29th range, which has been iPads for the last whatever, I think if they pull with the iPad date, they're perfectly fine for Christmas retail.
Yeah. That's what I was saying, October, November.
Yeah, if I had to guess, I would say that they're doing what they did when they released the iPhone 10.
Exactly.
Starting with like the base models, maybe beginning of October, and then late October, beginning November, the higher end models.
Yep,
I think that makes sense, and it's in time for Black Friday. It's in time for Christmas. They have enough time. It's just a little like a month or two late.
But at the end of the day, you know, they obviously they want to get them out. So they also want to be able to meet the needs or the desires and not have mm-hmm. people criticize that. Gee, I ordered one. Now I have to wait 3 months to get it. So
that's good.
A lot's going to depend on this, you know, depend on the supply chain and what can actually be done in this environment. And frankly, how the environment changes between now and then or during this whole time period. There's just so many uncertainties.
Yeah. And I have a feeling the problem is not the supply chain. The problem is that Apple can't travel to China and so on to get the phone ready for release.
On the Qualcomm leak, that's exactly what it says. Qualcomm says that it has to do with restrictions in travel.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking to the other point, though, Chuck, you know that this year, all supply is always constrained. This year, I don't see a world where it's not worse this year. You know, like I think you are still going to see that thing where you're going to want to order day one, and if you're not right on it, we'll see times pushing into November, December next year very quickly. I think this year very quickly.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, from what we've seen from the supply chain in China, I mean, there was a short period of like in what is it, March? I think March, beginning of April, where they were behind. But they have ramped up now. Like they're basically almost back to normal now. So I don't think we're going to see like any different like supply chain issues. I think we're just seeing that Apple wasn't Yeah, it's the same. I think they're just seeing that Apple has simply not been able to execute the production ramp up as fast, because they're usually like on the grounds working with the people closely, figuring out issues, and they have to do all of that remotely. We all know that that is not as effective in some cases.
Well, one thing you also got to remember, that the supply chain's up and working right now, and I can tell you why we know this. Apple released the thing that also helped them hit those third quarter numbers, and that's called the SE. The SE helped push the numbers, and they actually manufactured, produced, and shipped SEs everywhere to the planet. So we know that the supply chain is back working. Anecdotally, my pen and pad supplier is like, we're back in full swing. So, you know, she emailed me like a month and a half ago that, yeah, she's like, I'm happy to announce all of our factories are up. So, you know, please send me your orders.
We've had no issue getting parts for the past probably 6 or 7 weeks. It's been fine.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, and we're very much at the bottom of the pile in terms of, you know, what we get in terms of Apple products. Yeah, because obviously we're a third party to Apple, so we get the lowest of the low priority. We've not had a real issue for sort of 6 or 7 weeks. It's been a couple of things we haven't been able to get for all the things, but by and large, we've been absolutely fine with getting hold of parts. So,
Callum, no pressure here, but you are my litmus test for Apple supply chain. And when you say you can get parts without any problem, that tells me that the supply chain is doing fine.
It's. I mean, I remember coming on this show, probably January or February, saying that we probably brought 3 or 4 months worth of stock, you know, kind of expecting there to be a real issue in China, and there was, and there was a few things that we overbrought and a few things we underbrought, but by and large it was probably only about 7 to 10 weeks where it was tough to get things. But even then, even then there's still UK suppliers that we can use that have stock and things like that. So it's been a relatively small kind of shutdown period. You saying about the SE, I know for a fact that they're very popular. We all know they're very popular. So I don't think the supply chain issue is something that they're wary of, but probably aware of, if that makes sense, where it's something could happen, you know, as we're seeing, especially over here in the UK, that, you know, there's a potential that we're going to go into a second lockdown, and certain places have gone into second lockdown. So I think they're aware of it, but I don't think they're too worried.
The other thing is what I just thought about. The good thing for all of us is the software will have more time to mature. I mean, if they ship the phones later, we don't know when. I mean, whether they're going to release the iOS versions like at the usual time in September, or whether they're going to push that out, but let's say they do, that would give them time, because they don't, like, if they don't ship any phones, they don't have to have an iOS version for those phones ready. Yeah. And that was the whole mess last year. I mean, just remember iOS 13 that only shipped on the new phones, like nobody ever downloaded that.
That was straight up a mess.
Or they
will have upgrades to the more advanced version ready to be downloaded as soon as you get your phone.
But I think Apple will just straight up not release iOS 14 before the phone is ready, because there's like no need for that. I mean, usually they do like 2-3 days I think before, but there's no need for it. Like they can like make the release solid. I think that would be good for their image anyway.
You know, a solid release would actually be really nice.
So I've got a question for everyone. Does it really make a difference, other than to Wall Street and, you know, which quarter, what's going to land in? Does anybody here really think that anyone who wants an iPhone is going to say, oh, I can't wait a few more weeks and I'm going to buy, you know, jump ship and go somewhere else? I mean, okay, so you might buy a burner phone to tide you over, but does anybody really think that that's going to cause a switch with all the investment people have in apps and, frankly, and learning too about iOS versus the other platforms?
No, there's no risk. There's no risk from that side. I mean, anybody who has a phone that was made within the last 4 or 5 years is fine on that phone for, you know, a few months. It might not be the best experience, and you might be you know, hankering for that upgrade, but no, you're not going to see people jumping ship, or, you know, they have too much investment. And Apple knows that. I mean, that's why they built the ecosystem that they did. That's why they have iCloud. That's why they have Apple Music. That's why they have all these services and have been building those services, because all those things do help lock people in. I mean, it's not easy to switch, and people are, you know, people are super satisfied with iPhone. I mean, I think Tim Cook said in the hearing that they shoot for like a 99% satisfaction on iPhone, and they're achieving that. So I don't think that's what causes people to switch. It causes people to complain and you know, maybe be frustrated and say things online, but, you know, other than that, no.
Well, the people that are saying this, the people that are saying those things, you know, are a lot of the news sites. And it just makes me crazy. It's like, you know, oh, Apple may not ship their phones, you know, for a few extra weeks. And it's like, so what? I mean, are we that spoiled that we can't wait a couple weeks for, you know, what we really want? We're going to just
go ahead and say, oh.
Well, you know what that is?
Chuck, I'll be crying in the corner. Where's my new iPhone?
The news cycle people really enjoy Apple iPhone launches because they get the yay hooray launch, you know, late September, and then they get the, you know, variable gate in early October. You're killing you're killing their annual variable gate news cycle. Ben, Bud, Smoke, Antenna, Glass, logo crooked, like whatever. They just something that doesn't make any bit of sense whatsoever. Gate has come out every single year since five.
Started with Antenna, right?
Yeah, it started with
the first one. I remember.
Stupid Gate.
Pretty much the same time that YouTube blew up, and the same time that, you know, the Apple thing happened, and Leo and Unbox Therapy happened. Like, it's just been every single year. It's obnoxious.
Yeah. Some of them are real, but I know what you mean.
I mean, some of them are real, but it doesn't, like, they're definitely never as big as they're purported to be.
Yeah. Like, to Boring Gate was last year.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. No, to Chuck's point, I think the only thing that might happen, but that, I mean, I don't think concerns Apple that much either, is some, like, bigger sellers, or, like, bigger buyers, like, bigger companies might simply buy the current model, because they might need it in September and might say, well, it doesn't matter for us. Like, we're just going to buy that device. Who cares? And Apple doesn't care either. Like, I mean, they're not going to lose sleep over, I mean, even if it's 100,000, like if someone really buys 100,000 iPhones and they buy the last year's model, Apple's going to make money on that. So they don't care.
They might even make more money on that, because they're going to have a higher, higher margin. So they're probably happier if that happens.
Yeah.
Getting rid of stock them or not being sold. Mm-hmm. So,
The only issue for Apple, I think, is they need to some extent that ramp up time before the holiday season, that they can ramp up production, can satisfy basically the initial like people like us buying, and have then enough in stock for the Christmas time when everybody else buys. And that is going to be a little bit shorter.
I think one thing that they can try this year that might be a little bit different is almost, I have no better analogy, so excuse the analogy, because the analogy itself is asinine, but we'll work with it. Okay, for instance, I just bought a new Keychron keyboard, and Keychron has been making these keyboards for a while. Like, this is the version 8, so they've made at least 7 prior. The Kickstarter now is not about learning if we could do the manufacturing and all that stuff. The Kickstarter now is a temperature check and a pre-order type thing. So maybe it would be dope if, like, in September, they could, like, roll with the temperature check and the pre-order, where you're just doing something like, you know, dropping a $100 deposit or whatever to put in your tent. So then the supply chain can be adjusted according to the temperature in the room. And then you just overproduce that by 1.5x. And then you have supply for the street, for the people who will not pay attention to doing something like that. And at least that will eliminate supply chain constraints, because you have a much better, you know, uptake of what's going to happen that first 2 weeks.
Do you think, really think Apple needs that to today? I think that they're at a volume and at an experience level, having done this for 13 years, when they know how much to produce. And they're
They're always off by a little bit. Supply chain, right? So you guys were talking about the supply chain being constrained. So that's how you would temperature check the supply chain.
Patrice, yeah. I'm with you on this one. Apple is so on top of all of their numbers all the time that I don't think Apple needs to do a temperature check to have a really good idea of how much they need to buy. If this was 8 years ago, definitely, because they were still building up the track record for each year. But I think Apple has a pretty good idea how much they'll need to buy. And it wouldn't surprise me if Apple has some sort of internal system where they can look at like my purchase history, like what devices I have on my Apple ID and when they show up and when they disappear. And they can probably predict when I'm going to buy my next iPhone.
For sure. Yeah, that, and I mean, just in general, like how many people are going to their website and all of that.
Like, well, they can predict mine for sure. It's every September, no matter what.
No, I'm pretty sure that, and for Apple, I mean, if they say, well, let's 2x it, like let's 2x what we think we should order, because the supply chain can magically handle it, and then we have like maybe enough. Even if they only need 1.5x at the end.
Necessarily them per se. I'm thinking about the suppliers, because normally, okay, like, so remember when the first 10 was constrained, the problem was glass, right? So I don't think it's the stuff that they make themselves, which is why they're trying to get almost 100% they make. But you know, as long as they're still glass guy, and as long as they're still Qualcomm and the 5G chips.
But they're not going to increase that now. That takes a couple of years to increase. So they have a certain number of devices they can physically make based on what the suppliers, all of the suppliers can provide.
Exactly. So if they say, okay, let's max it. Right?
Barely. There was maybe a little bit of a delay, but very minimal. As I said, if they increase that for this year, let's say they increased it and they can do now whatever, twice as much as they did last year. They say, okay, we don't know, we'll just order all of it. Like every single phone that we can physically get into the supply, we'll just order, and they only need whatever, 1.5 as much. They're just going to leave the rest of the phones in inventory, and it's going to be sold like the next couple of months, and they're just going to reduce what they order, the next batch they order by a little bit. They don't care. Then they know that every phone that they make eventually is going to get sold.
And Apple clearly doesn't have a problem with the part of the news cycle where they have built up that inventory at the beginning. Then a couple months later, you see a drop off in parts orders. And then the media is all freaking out. Oh my God, the iPhones aren't selling. Apple is doomed because they've cut back on their parts orders. But no, they actually.
Every year. Every year in the first quarter. Yeah, it'll happen.
Every year.
What's also super impressive too, right? If you remember last year, I think last year's launch release and in the hands was probably one of the smoothest ever. Like that was like, you know, even like ordering on the first day wasn't too much of a problem. Like, I mean, I was in within the first 2 minutes, ordered and, you know, sitting there starting my 14-day countdown. The lines at the store were like nothing, you know, because we discovered here, if you let it bring it to your house now, UPS is later than picking it up at the store because they're busier. So, you know, we went to go pick it up at the store. And yeah, they were really, really smooth last year. Lines weren't bad, not to win people out. And for like the first 5 days, you could still just walk in and buy one.
I think. Sold gangbusters. Like it's not that they didn't sell it. That's why they had inventory.
Exactly why Boring Gate was funny. This is boring. No one's going to buy an iPhone 11. All right.
And they still sold more than before.
Yeah, go ahead with your bad self, Mr. Unbox Therapy.
Doc, you said something just a second ago that now has me wondering, how is Apple going to handle the pre-orders this time around? Because we've had the option of deliver to your house, pick up at the store, and just like you, I've always done the pick up at the store so I get my phone faster. Are they going to be able to do pick up in the store this time around?
I think limitedly, yeah. I think it's going to be very much so. Well, even this year, the previous purchase, the pickup at the store was appointment based, so there wasn't a lot of line holding. So they kind of have the system in place, right? You have X amount of appointments a day for that. So that might delay people's delivery because of the way pickup in the store has to be way more focused on your appointment time as your appointment time. But I think they will encourage, you know, bring it to the house, and we're going to hire, you know, people like Cal to be at home sitting by the phone to help walk you through it rather than the person in the store in the lovely shirt, right? Yeah. So that'd be a smart way to do it.
What's wrong with my shirt? What's wrong with my shirt?
No, not you. I meant the Apple Store shirt. Hey, I'm gonna pull up careers at apple.com right now just to see if they've already started looking for that in-home people to kind of cover the backlog.
Yeah, I'm guessing that they're using also the store staff that they don't need right now, or that they don't want to have in the store to not have too many people in there.
Right.
I think there are right now, at least for the stores that are open, which I know in the US they have, and I'm quoting Adam here, reclosed a bunch of them. For those, obviously there will be no pickup, but for the stores that are open, I know that they're doing pickups now, and I think they're just going to like do what Doc said. There will be appointments and you can get one, and if not, just like order it for delivery at home. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people will just do that because they feel like it's safer. I would agree with that.
Well, and let's not overlook the fact that now a lot more people are at home. So there's not the concern of a porch pirate picking up your package and running with it.
Oh, true.
You're going to be able to sit out there on the front stoop waiting for the UPS guy or FedEx or however they do it to be there. So in a lot of ways, I think it makes more sense across the board to have it delivered to your home.
Funny story, I've talked to a bunch of UPS delivery guys, and they told me that Apple packages have a higher percentage of people being at home than any other. Which kind of makes sense if you think
this
about it.
This does not surprise me.
You sit at home and wait for your stuff.
And it's also higher priced, so it's like something that people would care more about if it was stolen.
Well, I think people get more excited just in general about buying an Apple product than other products. Mm-hmm. And so there's that emotional element where you want to be there. You want to have the UPS person, well, in the past, hand you the package, and now they throw it at you from across the lawn. But still, I mean, the point is you want to be there and be part of that experience. And that's a big thing for a lot of people.
And I don't know any other manufacturer of anything. Please shoot me down if I'm wrong, but make such a fanfare like Apple does when they release something new, and there's, you know, they're on a stage and they're doing their keynote and all this kind of stuff. And it's when they release something new, it's a massive event for people. So it's people put it in their calendars and all sorts of stuff like that. So it's absolutely no wonder that people sit in to wait for this stuff, because you know, there's a whole kind of whirlwind around it of we're doing this and this is happening on this date, and it's, you know, probably more than a lot of others that I can think of.
High-end car manufacturers maybe.
Maybe, but Callum's point is so well taken, because, I mean, this group, I mean, sure, we're going to know, you know, date and time and all, but there is something about the way, and I guess it is, you know, that's Apple creates that folks are a lot more excited about. Now, I know a lot of people who just, I'll get it when I get it. But for the most part, yeah, you're excited if it's a new iPad or a new Mac or a new phone or whatever. And so that is something that no one else seems to be able to capture. Patrice, you took the words out of my mouth. I was thinking, okay, some high-end car manufacturers, but that's such a limited audience for those price items.
Absolutely. It's definitely nothing at that scale.
Patrice, how do you feel about moving to Cork, Ireland?
Me? I would be up to that.
They have, and this way you can never be late for a Zoom call because they have a at-home relationship admin advisor, German speaking, but you have to work Ireland.
Yeah, I know. That's their support center.
Yeah, see?
I have talked to a lot of people in Cork.
You can't do that, though. Then you can't podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And you're done.
Right, right.
Dude, the number
see, this people ask me all the time, don't you want to work for Apple? Wouldn't you want to work for Apple? It's like, no, they'd be control my life.
Yep. I would. To be honest, I would. I would give that up.
You'd quit? You'd get rid of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
For a little while.
It's funny. That number one reason why I left is because I wanted to podcast, and it's crazy. And I kick myself all the time because of what I lost in stocks. Because when I left, we were at $120 first time before any splits. And yeah.
My 401k is very happy right now.
Yeah,
that's a good thing. So Adam, I assume that means you do have some Apple stock.
I had a situation where I had switched a job at one point and some money rolled over and I didn't realize it was just kind of sitting around idle. And I decided, I'm just going to take this and plunk it in Apple. And it was crazy because it was at that time when it was at what, like 400 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I got like, I don't know, it was a tiny handful of shares. I don't remember the number. But then like 2 weeks later, it did the 7-for-1 split. So.
Nice. And it just is about to do a 4-to-1 split.
Yep.
So your stock is reproducing quite nicely, Adam.
Yeah, and the dividends, and I've just been reinvesting the dividends, which have been great too, by the way.
Yeah.
And is this part, aren't we supposed to say some sort of legal thing at this point about, I guess we're not giving any stock advice, so maybe we don't have to, but I do own some Apple stock, so I'm biased.
I will break the rules and give stock advice. Put your bones in the oven, 425 for 20 minutes first, and allow the bones to caramelize. If you are adding root vegetables to your stock, also place them in for at least the last 15 minutes of that roasting, and you will get with the remoulade, and you take that. And then, you get a little Maillard reaction and you take that and then you add it to your pot. You get a much richer tasting, deeper umami in your stock.
Yep. Second that.
All right. So your stock, go ahead, Jack.
Well, I'm just, you know, I kind of think you're right, Jeff, you know, so full disclosure, I do own a small holding of Apple as well. You know, it's not anything that's going to make any difference to anybody, but it does seem, I think, just to be good practice that if you are an Apple stockholder and we're here advocating or talking about Apple, it's not bad to mention it.
I put apples in my stock.
I went to the apples go in the stock.
I don't brown my apples before I do put them in the stock, but when I do need to sweeten the stock, I would definitely put apples in.
See?
All right. Any spices or seasonings you recommend?
Yeah.
In your stock, you start basically nothing except for a bouquet garni.
Yeah, and a little bit of salt.
Hint of Microsoft.
Microsoft. Yeah. And the cool thing is you can split that stock.
And Cal, if you're using a Windows 7, it has a more herby flavor because of the hills.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Welcome to today's edition of Foodie Flashback.
when you get to this part, he's gonna be like, "What? What the heck is going on?
What just happened?"
Oh, Doc, Ewan has reached that point long ago in this episode.
That's true.
I'm pretty sure. And I should probably say right now, it's been great being able to do shows with you guys, and I'll really miss you once you kicks me out.
Once you're fired. Yeah. What's next?
Should we, talk, Should we talk about the judiciary hearing?
That is next on my list.
Oh, cool.
And I literally do have a list.
Ooh. You're better prepared than I was.
My word, notes.
I was going to say you're better prepared than Ewan, but then I don't want to get kicked off the show.
No, you're no, giving a watching one now. You're probably okay.
He'll just cut our pay again.
Dang. I better okay. save those apple cores.
What is 50% of zero?
Less than zero.
It's half.
Less than zero.
Infinite loop.
You're paying him back is what you're doing.
Oh, okay. Shit.
Oh. Well, this is going to be an awkward conversation.
£10 entry fee or you sit in the Zoom waiting room.
I wish I would have thought of that before starting the show today, because I could have made a couple bucks.
50.
True.
Yeah. Which then I'd have to pay to you. So this congressional hearing thing where Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google, am I remembering Google. Everyone
yep.
correctly?
Yep.
Correct. All had to come in and testify before a committee at a hearing. And the thing for those people that haven't been following this is over monopoly abuse concerns. And mm-hmm. so in the case of Apple, it's about the App Store and whether or not Apple, the way Apple controls its App Store is creating an unfair and inappropriate advantage for Apple in the software mm-hmm. space. And I will start by saying, I really felt like the questions that were tossed to Tim Cook were softballed.
Oh, totally. They barely talked to him at all. Like, he was sitting there. Like, at some point, I was kind of wondering whether he just fell asleep or something because...
You know why this is? Okay, in the annals of park bullies, right? They're the guys that literally throw punches and trip people and push people mm-hmm. around. And then there's the dude in the back who just calls people names, right? He mm-hmm. acts tough. He acts like he's one of them, but pretty much he's just calling people names. That's mm-hmm. Apple. Apple's just calling people names, right? What they're doing isn't as egregious as like taking a brand that's selling well on your store named after really tall women and recreating that brand and selling it at a cheaper price and then making barriers for the other brand to show up in your search results. What they're doing isn't the same as the alphabetical, you know, people with the wide color palette logo and the things that they've done. So I think Apple's infringements, if you were, are minor by comparison to their contemporaries. Zuckerberg, I'm looking at you. So I think that's one reason why he gets, you know, the softball yeah. questions. And to be honest, and this may be more my opinion than anyone else's, a lot of it is whining from developers. I mean, like, I get it, but
I'm not buying that part.
I don't think it's as bad as people say. I think it's their store. They have a right. And what I will say, do you want to have the phone right now to everyone? This is my always question when people bring this up. Do you want to have the phone where, like, you have no control over the security of the software on your stuff? Because they have to let more people in because the government said so, and then all the nefarious type stuff that comes in, like what's going on with Facebook bots and Twitter bots right now.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, they figured out a way on the Mac. They kind of had to because, like, legacy reasons, but they figured out a way to make the Mac more secure. We've complained about that, but it is more secure due yep. to notarization, due to Gatekeeper and so on. And they figured out a way. You can, like, sideload. You can even sideload on iOS. Like, if you have a developer certificate or if you have a enterprise certificate, you can sideload your apps. And, like, Readle, for example, is doing that. So it's not impossible.
The person who's complaining is Epic Games. Do we really need Fortnite so bad on our phones? That Epic also, for the money that they make, can't they just afford to pay the premium that Apple is
charging? But
yes,
the problem is not the Fortnites or the Adobes. This was another thing, a problem I had with Tim Cook's statement about you know, a large percentage of apps not paying anything to Apple. And what's ironic about that is he's talking about companies like Adobe. He's talking about companies like Microsoft. He's talking about companies like Netflix. So these are huge apps that do big numbers. And so they can point to those and say, look, these guys are paying 0% to Apple, because you buy the subscription outside the app store and you load the apps and you use all the apps and it doesn't cost them anything. Problem is that's not the developers that are like getting hit the hardest. Those guys should be paying. Like if anything, it should be flipped. The problem is the guys like I don't know if you read Brett Simmons' piece, but it was great. You know, it's like we have to pay 30%. We used to pay, you know, 5-10%. And if you want to sell an iOS app, you have to go through the App Store. Now, the other thing I want to point out is something important Jeff said. This hearing was about monopolistic behavior. This isn't what I'm talking about here with what developers have to pay and how it kind of is hard for them. That's not about monopolistic behavior. Yeah, they only have one place they can sell the app, but they also only have one device they can sell the app on to, like one platform too. So like, if we're going to call those monopolies, I you know, that's a bit odd. You know, a developer can make an app for Android if they want. They can make an app for another platform. So that's not really monopolistic. But it is, you know, rough that they don't have an option other than the App Store and other than paying 30% cut of their revenue. Now imagine if you were doing work and, you know, and somebody's taking 30% cut, you're not going to be too happy about it either. So I don't see that as whiny developers when they know where they know if they could sell it straight through Square or some other platform, they'd be paying 5%, right? But they don't have the option.
No,
the person that's holding them to task is the U.S. government. And I don't know about your taxes. I'm at 38%+. So I do it every day. So it's the same
thing. I get that, Doc. That's you're missing the point. The point is, you know, these are small developers who are trying to make a living. They're small companies. And a 30% cut is, that's a big cut. And does Apple need the 30% cut from those guys? No, they should be taking the 30% cut from Microsoft and, you know, and these, the bigger guys. Yeah. But even still, like, I think they could take less and still run the App Store. And Steve Jobs launched the App Store, he said they weren't going to make any money. I guarantee you at 30%, Apple's making some good profit off of the App Store.
Yeah, we don't. I think where Tim Cook's statement was also a bit disingenuous is he was asked whether they treat developers, different developers differently. And he said, no, we treat them all the same. The guidelines are the same for everyone. And we know that is not true. I mean, the way he phrased it, I'm not quoting him, so like it's not 100% the same. But the way he phrased it, he might have been technically, like, in a way, not lying. But we know it's not true. I mean, we've seen it with Netflix. We've seen it
for him.
Exactly. We've seen it with Netflix. We've seen it with Amazon. With Amazon, it was even like there was an email leaked where like Apple actually confirmed the 15%. At the beginning, which is not a deal that everybody else gets. And if from my perspective, if he had just said, yes, we treat different apps differently, like every app that has, let's say, 1 million+ users gets like a special treatment because we know that those apps are important. If Netflix broke, if Facebook broke, if Twitter broke, our users would complain and our users would be like in a bad position. And that is not something that we want for our users. And that would be totally okay, and that would be totally true. But the way he basically said, no, everybody is the same, we know it's not true.
Well, he used, I think, he used Animal Farm logic.
Yeah.
Everyone's treated the same, but some are treated more the same than others.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, this is the way the world works. I can't figure out why. I mean, yes, if I want Netflix on my platform, if I start to make a phone tomorrow, I'm going to cut Netflix a deal so they will be on my phone so that I will sell more phones. And it's just, I'm sorry, it's not that hard. This is the way, is it fair? Is it equitable? If you define those terms exactly, no, yeah. But let's step into reality here for a minute. And this is what makes me crazy about this argument every time it comes up. You know, that if you have something that people want, you have a lot more power to cut deals. And, yeah. You know, is that fair to the guy who has created, you know, I mean, okay, so somebody creates a fantastic calculator app or something, you know, brand new, right on the market. How big's the market for that? But if somebody creates an app to print money, there's a heck of a market for that. And of course, they're going to get a better deal. So why are we having this discussion?
Well, so Chuck,
I think because
to me, the thing is, what they say is that it's hard because they want the experience of people being able to purchase on the phone. But however, just like Audible, to this very day, and I've run through audiobooks 3 a month, I have to go get them on my computer and then press the button and they show up on my phone. So Fortnite, Epic, you whiny B-words, let the people buy the stuff on another device. Let them buy it, whatever. They're going to do it because that game is so popular. They're going to do it. The capitulations and the cheating and the buying Bitcoin and robbing people's accounts and making nefarious gift cards so that people can buy more crap for Fortnite is so huge that it obviously works. So you're not small enough to whine about it. If your app is that good, they will go to where they got to go to get what they need in order to make it work with their phone. And if your app is not that good, that's your problem.
And Doc, and how about the overhead that comes with running the App Store? I mean, everybody seems to act. It seems like they think you just put it up on the shelf and go. There's security on the App Store. There's service on the App Store for these things. There is the review process. There is the bandwidth. And I don't know about you guys, but every morning I wake up and I have 20 or 30 new updates. So somebody is paying that bandwidth, and that's got to be Apple if they're hosting it.
I once did like back of a napkin math or back of an envelope math. Just the beta versions that Apple distributes, how much data that is, and how much that, like, even like if they get like very favorable terms, it's going to cost them. Just for the beta one of iOS, which only goes out to developers and only like a fraction of developers actually download. That is a lot of data. Yeah.
So,
go Adam, because Chuck,
So what I want to say is I'm not in disagreement with you either on the business side of things, right? Apple has a business to run. They have costs. They have all these things. This is how they've chosen to run their business, and they shouldn't have to necessarily apologize for it. The issue that I have is they sort of speak out of one side saying, look at all the stuff we do for developers and look at all the stuff, how great we are, and look at, and developers are super happy. And there are some developers that are not happy with this. This is not all true, you know, like, and again, this is Apple running a business. They have PR, they have an image. Yeah, I get all of that part of it. I think what it comes down to at the end of the day is sort of what Patrice started to go down is like, some developers are just asking for a choice, and we're really talking about iOS, right?
Yeah.
They have a choice on the Mac. They don't have to go in the Mac App Store. They have other challenges if they don't. Apple's been able to figure out the security there. You know, why can't we do this on iOS too? Why can't we have Gatekeeper and say, if you want to buy all your stuff through the App Store, go for it. You can stay in the App Store environment. If you want to click the box and say, I'd rather sideload something, you can click the box. You know, like, I don't think it changes they do have options. Now, do they have to do it? No. Are they obligated to do it? No. They can run their business however they want, and I'm cool with that. But I think it's fair for people to question it and to say, I think there's a better way. So that's the part I'm okay with. And I'm also okay with Apple saying, no, this is how we do it. And if you want to live in our ecosystem, this is how it works. So I kind of see both sides of it.
I think that's where the pro really comes from, and where I absolutely agree that we should look into it. The question is Apple using their position that they have, that they're the manufacturer for the phone, they're the only one who controls access to the device, and they have competing services in some cases. Like, they have like competing services to Spotify, they have a competing service to Netflix and so on in the meantime. Are they using their position on that platform with access to hundreds of millions of devices? Are they using that to favor their own things, or are they like trying to keep it fair? And that is a question you can ask.
Why do they have to keep it fair? Let's just start there. What rule in the planet that says why they have to keep it fair? There is none, because it's their business. If you want to have an app store that works the way you want to do it, develop a bad word phone, and then you do the work to get it to be the number one phone in the planet, and then you do the work to get almost a billion users, and then you can do what you want. So anybody could create a phone. Lord knows a bunch of people tried, and you know, Samsung would say they did it and did it better. So you can't say it's antitrust in that matter, because Samsung did exactly what we said. They go, we don't like the Apple thing. We're going to make our own. And they actually still to this day make more. But they also gave up on making a Samsung app store because they just didn't want to play that game. They said, hey, Google, you make the app store for us. And Google went, absolutely. And then so that's how we have Android. So if these guys are that whiny, then go create a phone and do it that way. But Apple created the phone, and they got lucky at the time and the position and the quality and the care and everything they put in back in 07 and 08, so that when 09 rolled around and they decided to develop the App Store, they could rock out with their cock out and call every shot they wanted to call, because they did it. It's free market.
To some extent, yes, and to some extent, no, because there are limitations to a free market. We've seen it with Microsoft back in the day when like the whole browser war happened, where like someone had to step in and stop that. And ultimately, it's about us as consumers. Like, yeah, as a developer or like as anybody, like, yeah, you can create your phone. But at some point, you also have to think about the people who are on the platform and who are to some extent locked in.
Okay, so how many consumers are complaining that their developers and Apple created the antitrust? Not a single one. It's only developers complaining.
No, I'm not so sure about that. And that the problem is, like, as a consumer, you might not even know. But like, if you don't get, like, I don't know, if Spotify couldn't be in the Apple platform because Apple decided that music apps are not allowed because they have their own app. I mean, sure, Spotify couldn't do anything about it, but you as a consumer would be locked into Apple services, and that might not be a good thing for you, because then Apple can basically charge whatever.
Okay, so name the application in the suit that you're locked into Apple service because Apple won't let them play.
Yeah, that's the thing that's speculative. They haven't done that, and they're careful not to do that.
That's where it could lead without scrutiny. So it's important to check it to make sure that Apple don't go down what is an extreme route, and something I'm sure they would never do because it would be a PR disaster, obviously.
But other companies have done it.
Double check that to make sure that Apple don't go down that route.
Okay, so let me put this in a way that maybe you guys won't understand. You know what absolutely sucks more than anything else is being accused of doing something before you do it. Like when I go shopping, okay? Mm-hmm. That's the worst freaking feeling in the world. And I have wanted to turn around and punch the living shit out of people following me around the store. So you're saying to Apple, we're going to accuse you, you might be an asshole one day.
No, they haven't done it.
And nor have they purported to do it, or nor have they tried to do it.
But all I'm saying is the reason why the checks and balances are there is because people have done it in the past. I think it's important to make sure that it doesn't happen. I'm not saying Apple will. I don't think they will. I never said they would. But it's important to check them. They haven't just checked Apple. They've checked everyone else. And I think it's important that they do that.
They have legitimate concerns. Like, they didn't just start that. Well, I hope that they didn't just start it for political reasons, but it sounded at least like, when I listened to it, that they had actual facts and actually had people that complained about it.
So did this warrant a congressional hearing?
Probably not for Apple, just based on the fact that they got pulled in because they were pulled in with everybody. I mean, and to the earliest point of this conversation, it was why Tim Cook kind of was pushed to the background. It was like, okay, you know, you guys are here. Great. You made your statement. You're not really doing anything we're super concerned about. Now we're going to talk to these other guys.
The only reason why they got pulled in, I will put money on, the only reason why they got pulled in is one of those octogenarian centers did something to their phone and they weren't able to get in, or they're still pissed off because Apple won't let them get into the private data of people's phones because they're secure on
it. Yeah, could be.
So they're like, we're going to pay them back by bringing them in and let them sit here and look like a-holes on the TV for no other reason than they pissed us off because they wouldn't let us into the back ends of phones. So it's either one of those two things.
Doc, yeah. I agree with you, but I think there's another thing too. Apple's the largest company in the world. How could you have congressional hearings if we don't have Apple there with this concern? So I feel like they got pulled in just because of their position in the industry, not because necessarily there were any overriding concerns.
It looked,
and by the way, where was Microsoft?
Yes, or Twitter.
They weren't invited.
Or Twitter.
They weren't invited.
Mm-hmm.
No. Are they irrelevant?
Yeah.
You know, I'd like
to think so.
But yeah, Microsoft has a history here. So you'd think that they would be included if for no other reason than we've had to deal with Microsoft as an aggressive monopoly.
Mm-hmm. What have they been doing though? You know, like, I don't know. They haven't been up to much lately, I guess. They've been flying under the radar.
Double Jeopardy. They got Double Jeopardy.
Yeah, goes beautifully in a stock anyway. So.
I mean, they're trying to push Microsoft Teams. Zoom is killing them. Where are they dominating at this point? I mean, they still have Office. They still have Windows, obviously. But I mean, those are the old things, right? We've been through all those conversations already. Yeah. So like, what's the current thing where they've got this bad behavior? I can't think of anything.
That's true.
Hey,
ultimately, I think to Chuck's and to Doc's point, I mean, it is a PR thing as well. Like, I mean, it is a public hearing. If they invite like the couple of biggest companies in the world, they're going to get press on it. And I think that's probably the other part.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know how much time we have left, but there was one other question I wanted to ask the group. You were talking about sideloading apps on iOS, okay? Sideloading apps on iOS will cost Apple money because you're going to get more support calls because of those apps being loaded on. So how about developers? You know what? How about if you give us a 50% cut and we'll let you sideload your app?
There you go.
Because you're increasing our cost, so you're going to pay the freight.
How about your first support question is, did you tick the box that said you could install apps that weren't in the App Store? Yes. All right. Call the developer.
But it doesn't work that way.
I did tech support for Apple, so trust me. You have no idea how much yelling and screaming. I got called ungodly names because the HP wireless printer that we gave them for free when they bought their MacBook would not work wirelessly because it sucked.
Get your feelings hurt, Doc.
Yeah, there's a reason why that printer was free.
No, it was hard. So we always had to tell people that we don't support that. And then they would get mad, but you gave it to us. I'm like, how much did you spend on the printer? And they're like, what? It came with the thing. I go, exactly. So you take the time to call HP to figure out why it doesn't work. But that was like one of the first wireless printers. And so it was just going to be hard anyway. But that's how people are. It says when you open the box, there's a gigantic orange piece of paper that says, if you have any problems with installation or whatever, please do not contact the Apple Store. Call 1-800, it's my HP, and not a single soul did that. They showed up.
Of course not, because they're humans.
I don't even want to know how many calls Apple support gets about apps, like specific issues with apps that have nothing to do with Apple, just because, I don't know, an app is not doing the thing that they wanted to do, or like,
they
don't
understand how it works. The amount of phone calls we get on it, it's absolutely ridiculous. So, for example, we had one this week. We did a SSD upgrade, funnily enough, on an iMac about 6 months ago, and the customer phoned up. They'd upgraded to the latest version of macOS. Yeah, fine. And I think Office 2008 had stopped working or something like that. Now, this was obviously our fault because we touched their Mac 6 months ago, and we get calls like that absolutely constantly. Mm-hmm. So I really get what you're saying, Doc. I mean, when we do a job, like we factor in the fact that someone has to pick up a phone, send an email. So even when someone phones Apple up and someone has to pick up the phone and say, no, you've got to phone up the developer or phone up whoever. That costs money. So I think, I tend to agree.
Yeah, but you're talking about the richest company in the world. So, like, they can handle it. It's part of doing business. Come on. Is Apple going to whine about that now?
Yeah.
How are they the richest company in the world?
Yeah, but being the richest company in the world has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with it, with how much does it cost for me to support my platform and my app, or your platform and your app. You know, if I'm Apple, Callum just said it. Every time he picks up the phone, it costs him money. So every time they have a question on an app, it costs them money. And I think that's a part of something that doesn't get factored into the 30% equation.
And you know what?
I mean, you're alleging that they're making no profit off that 30%. That's going all to overhead.
They're allowed to make money on that overhead. I mean,
I agree. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just trying to get what the point is, right?
Well, the point is that I'm not convinced that. Do I think they're making a profit? Yes. I have no idea what the number is. And you guys know me. I'm very pro developer, but I think that it does get overlooked how much Apple. By running the App Store, by promoting the App Store, by keeping up everything and doing the approval process and distributing the updates, and I think all those things never, if Apple were to publish some information on that, it would be very interesting. You know they're never going to do it. But what does it really cost to run the App Store? And what does it cost for Adam, for you to put your app in there?
Yeah.
So all those free apps.
Yeah, like, you know what I'm mad at Apple for? Tim's not a brawler. I'm a brawler. Like, when they ask me, like, well, aren't you hurting the economy by doing so? I would be like, listen, mother effers, let me show you how much we have paid developers since 2007. Let me tell you about the 500 plus thousand jobs we've created. And now that number is much, much higher.
Right? That was in his opening statement too, though, by the way.
Yeah, but they don't push it hard enough. I was like, if you count, I mean, like, not that we're getting paid for this, but the reason why we're sitting here doing this right now is because of Apple. Right. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people, like, I think of companies like Dodo Case and Spec and Grove Made and Pen and Quill, you know, like some of these fantastic companies that have come out of the ecosystem initially created by Apple. Even some of the stuff that we use to this day, like Twitter and all of that, got its comeuppance because of the way the mobile device has made it what it is. Apple and soon later Samsung helped helped Reed Hastings. Netflix was hurting, brother, until the iPhone came out and put Netflix on it. Netflix was hurting. Once the iPhone came out, Netflix was like, hey, we can kill it with the DVD thing and do the streaming thing, cut our costs way down, and Netflix went buyout. So do not tell me that Apple didn't do crap for this economy and they're hurting the economy because they want to take 30% from a bunch of a-hole whiners at Epic Games.
I mean, they're the reason I have a job. Well, a job doing this. So
yeah,
I know exactly what you mean. I wouldn't do this job if Apple didn't exist. So yeah, there you go.
It's all true.
So we have some sponsors. And Apple.
That would be cool. They would never do it, but that would be cool.
I come after the list on IMM Max, though.
Yeah. I'm kind of concerned, though, if Apple was a sponsor that they would want editorial control over what we say. And,
that's not even a concern. That's a mandate. Like, it would happen.
Yeah. But you know who does not mandate what we say? Obviously, TSO hosts. So TSO Host is absolutely awesome because they are making sure that we actually have a place for all of the amazing episodes for everything that British Tech Network does, surprisingly, including this very episode today. and their tech support is wonderfully patient, and they are able to gracefully handle issues like when we screw something up, being able to get us fixed and back up and running in record time. So thank you to TSO Host for having our back, and give them a shout out on your social network channels, because they deserve some love. So let TSO Host know that you love them. And the next time you need to grab a domain, get some hosting done, hit them up. TSO Host is great. And also, we need to talk about iMinMax, the company that could have put a battery in my iPad mini, even though I'm not even on the same continent, and done all of this faster than Apple could ever do for me right now. So if you need to get something fixed, including apparently iPhones that get run over, Callum is your man. Callum, I have come to the conclusion that the only way you'd have to turn someone away and say, I'm sorry, I can't fix that, is if there are literally no electronic components in the device.
Not necessarily, no.
Yeah, but let's roll with it, because it sounds really good.
Yeah. Well, it's just, if you have the casing left, I could build it up from there.
Well, see, okay. Even if you don't have the electronic components for your device, Callum can fix it. iMinMax also sells computers.
I'm gonna set him an iMac shell from, 1994.
The oldest Mac I fixed. Poor Mac, my favorite.
Yes.
The oldest Mac I fixed was 1989. So, yeah, I could probably could.
Older than him.
Awesome.
Wow, those are the iMacs that still had to use a two-stroke engine to run, right?
Yeah, it sounded like a canal boat when you turned it on. It needed diesel. A bit of coal helped as well. But
All right, do you have a machine of the week? Maybe, preferably one that's not coal-powered.
We don't have a coal-powered one, unfortunately, but we do have, plenty of... 21.5-inch iMacs, a few with SSDs, and they're still all up on the store. So we are looking to get rid of them. So the prices will be going down on them. So if you head over to imnmacs.com, we've actually put a lot more stock on over the past couple of days. So head over there, have a look, and you get 5% off if you mention the podcast.
I can vouch for those machines. It's my daily work driver. I got one back there.
Very, very good machines. I'm doing the podcast on one right now.
That's awesome. Awesome. All right, let's do some cool things. And we're just going to go down the list. Callum, what do you have?
So I have, I don't know what it's useful for, I'll be really honest.
I'm already intrigued.
Someone has developed an app that you can run on your Mac, meaning you can run Mac OS 8. Had a play with it. It works relatively well. Again, I don't have a clue how it would be at all useful, but it's really, really, it's really cool and really neat. And you can run Mac OS 8 on your Mac as an app. You can run it on Windows and Linux as well. I don't know why you'd want to. But it's a really neat, really stable, actually, little bit of kit. So.
Nostalgia.
Nostalgia, that's the word, yeah. It's very nostalgic.
Awesome. All right, Chuck, what do you have?
Jeff, I've spent the last week, even more so than normal for some reason, in conference calls. And so this is something that's been probably picked a dozen times over the
years. You're picking alcohol, aren't you?
No. I hadn't even thought about it from that angle, but the one thing, it's one thing for folks' cameras to not be good, but when their audio is terrible, man, it is really terrible. It's a terrible experience for the people on the other side. So I'm going to encourage folks to go out and buy a USB mic. Now, I hate to recommend any particular one, but I will pick the Yeti from Blue Microphones. Mm-hmm. Simply because it's got adjustable patterns. It has a large enough stand that it will sit on your desk and it'll be in a very good position to hear you. And if it happens to be in your picture on the video conference, it really looks like maybe you know what you're doing. but it's, and there are plenty of good USB mics out there, putting nothing down. It's just a Yeti, really, and it's very affordable. The biggest problem you have right now is trying to find them, because sometimes the stock is a bit limited or non-existent. So you may have to shop around. There are different variations on the Yeti. They're all really good. So I'm going to pick the Blue Yeti as my pick for today.
I think it's an awesome mic, and I have recommended it to many people that are just getting into podcasting. Adam, what do you have?
I am going to pick an app that has been very helpful for me now that I'm working remotely, back to work, and having to deal with time tracking. So I've been using an app called Timing. And it is amazing because it allows me to set up all of the kind of projects that I'm working on, different clients that I'm doing work for. But the biggest advantage for me is I'm really bad at starting and stopping timers. And so what it does in the background is it's watching all of the apps that you're opening, what you're using. So if I do somehow forget to set a timer, I can go back. I can see what I was working on, what files I had open in my coders, and be able to kind of track all of that time. And it also has some smarts built into it. So it'll kind of try to figure out, you know, based on the projects you already have set up and what you've been working on, sort of where things go. And it just makes it really, really easy. There's hotkeys for starting and stopping timers. You can set up all kinds of automation with it. It's just amazing. And honestly, the other thing is I can't tell you what the normal price is. I want to say $30 or $40 because I got it through SetApp. So just another thing from SetApp. So I was looking for something. I needed a timer, started searching there, found this one, and it's fabulous. It works great. It's got great color coding on it. It has all kinds of reporting you can run on it. It just goes on and on. It's really full-featured timing app. It sits right there in your menu bar, and it's great. So it's just called Timing. And you can find it on SetApp, or just search for Timing Mac app on Google, and you should find it.
Awesome. And just so everyone knows, if you do the thing where you look at our chat logs, am I saying that right, Patrice?
Yes, yes.
Excellent.
If you want to find the links.
There you go. If you want to find the links, go back in and look at our chat for today. And and what you will find are links and some completely on point complaints about me hosing up the live stream.
It is. I just looked. Timingapp.com is the website, and it is actually a subscription. So it's a monthly subscription. They've got a couple different levels. I don't know which version's actually in setup. It's probably just the productivity base one, but it has all the features that I need. If you need other things like API integration, it looks like, or Zapier integration, that sort of stuff, you can step up. But just the base model is really great for basic time tracking, and it has a ton of features. It's way more than basic.
Just popped it in the chat for you.
Yeah, awesome. BritishTechNetwork.com/chat, and then navigate to the 31st of July.
You know, the thing that's absolutely awesome for me is that I have been on this show for literally years. And when Ewan rattles off all of that stuff, I'm never listening. Because I'm always realizing, crap, I forgot to grab my link for my thing.
Yep.
So I'm off grabbing a link and not listening. Mm-hmm. So Patrice, I'm glad that you actually pay attention.
Well, I mean, I've had a couple of weeks of experience now, so I had time to practice.
Which goes to show that I don't pay attention when you were saying it either.
That's fine.
Yeah. Doc, what do you have?
Okay, first I want to add on to Chuck's pick real quick. Because the Yetis are hard to find, and the audiophile of me personally hates Yetis, but I won't put my spin on it. This is a Samson Q2U. It's only $50. It's half the price of the Yeti. In my opinion, it sounds better, but either one is good. What's really good about this guy is it's USB, but when you grow up, you can just plug an XLR cable and keep going. It does both for this $50. Now
this was your pick a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now because people are gouging, it's going to cost you $60. It's worth the $100, to be honest. The AT2020, ATR 2020, which is what this is. They're basically the same mic. That one always retails for $100. But speaking of $100, I'm going to put every inch of my credibility on the line and say that I have finally found, after years and years and years and years, since the old Kensington, what? Why you just do that? Since the old,
I pointed because this is an AT 2020 right here.
Yeah, the old Kensington trackball where I stole the 8-ball from the pool hall and put it in there. That was my favorite pointing device. And when it stopped working, I nearly cried. I sat down, opened a bottle of whiskey, buried it in the backyard. That was my favorite pointing device. And I pretty much have hated every pointing device since. For the longest time, about the last 10 years, I've been stuck on Logitech MX Anywhere because of its size, and it's really good for what it is, but I've always like lived with it. Like I accepted it, like I accept Jeff as a friend.
That's so sweet. This
is Logitech MX Master 3. Okay, it's $100. And this is the best pointing device for Apple ever. Now, they have always sold MX Masters, and yes, those do work on the Apple device, but Logitech actually did something to this other than just make the box white. They added something really cool that's known as Flow. Okay, and it's not the progressive lady about your insurance. If I'm using my iMac right here, when I get to the edge of my second screen, if I keep going, it's now controlling my Mac Mini. I don't have to literally change devices. Do you understand how mind-blowing that is? I just wipe all the way across. I get to the third monitor over there, and it's controlling the Mac Mini. If I had, you know, my other Mac Mini connected, I can control this way, and it would control that Mac Mini. So you could actually put all your devices on the desk, and it could be Mac and PC. They don't have to be, you know, matching, but it goes across. The only caveat, Flow doesn't work when I put it to the iPad. So I have my third device set up as the iPad on iOS 13 and 14 public beta. It's amazing on the iPad. So the best feature though to me right here is this, you know, the scroll wheel, how on mice they click so you can get your little thing, but then when you want it to go faster, you have to press a button and then it can fly. Wait, I set mine to mute. I hope that didn't do anything. Yes, so then it can fly. On this one, it actually has a centrifugal force type gear that when you're scrolling slow, it's clicky, but if you roll it, the gear moves out of the way and it flies 1,000 lines per second. So when you're in that deep, deep code, you're trying to find that CSS thing at the bottom of the CSS, you can just go click, click, whang, and it's all the way at the bottom in seconds. It's smooth, it's light, 70 hours of battery life on a single charge, and it fits comfortable in the hand. This is seriously the greatest pointing device I ever invented. Logitech MX Master 3 for Mac.
Nice. All right, Patrice, what do you have?
So I'm going to do a little bit of a little green today and take you on a little ride, because when you were talking about finding the link, I actually forgot that I needed a cool thing today. So I thought, what could I pick? I could have picked my iPad Pro, which I've been using since Wednesday as my work machine, since my Mac died, and it's, well, not getting repaired, but getting replaced now, which has been awesome, especially with an external keyboard and a trackpad. Highly recommend that. But I thought I could pick a podcast, and I could have picked Adam's podcast. Maccast is really good. But there is one podcast that came back from the dead and that I really enjoyed, and that is Homework. I think it was originally, I want to say it was Aaron Mankey and who was the other guy?
Mike Vardy.
Mike
Vardy?
No, I don't think so. But one of them basically split, and so the podcast went on a little bit of a hiatus for about a year, I think. Now it's back, and they have a new co-host, and I'm really, really enjoying it. I'm catching up. Like, they started only beginning of this year, basically beginning of the whole Corona thing. So it's not too late to catch up if you're a big fan of Homework. Please do that. I put the link in the show notes. I can't remember the domain for that podcast.
Oh my God, you're fired, Patrice. And yeah. I'm fired because I forgot. It was Kalo.
Kalo, David.
Kalo. Yes, oh, sorry, Dave. Sorry.
Yes, exactly.
I talk to Dave like every week, so I'm mm-hmm. fired.
Yeah, it was safe. And Dave left, as far as I remember, because of work for the most part. Yes. Like he simply yes. couldn't do it anymore. But they're back and they're really good. Don't ask me about the name of the new co-host because I'm really bad with names. But he's good. Like I really enjoy the stuff they're talking about. And it is still like they have 200 and I think close to 30 episodes or something. They're still good. They're still relevant, especially during Corona. There's so much to do. They talk a little bit about waking up at 5:30 and getting work done before the family wakes up, and that they basically can't do that, or they manage to do that, and were beating themselves up about it and all that, which is super relevant. A lot of people do that, and it's actually like should do that. Just listen to your body. If it needs sleep, then needs sleep. So Homework Podcast, I put the link in. If you look for it in like iTunes or whatever, you will find it. It is an amazing podcast. It's worth listening, even every single episode, like all the 200 something episodes, listen to all of them. I've listened to all of them over time. 235.
It's Dave Kahlo and Harry Marks now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then Aaron left. Yeah, I even didn't remember who left and who stayed. It is amazing.
That's good. I was on that show back in like episode 30, way back in the day.
I do remember that even when you did that.
Cool. To bookend that doc, I was on, I think, right after lockdown started.
Dude, name a podcast on Apple Store that iTunes podcast store that you're not on. Oh, I know. Sure. You're not on your podcast, Jackass.
Oh. Yeah, well, maybe I should do something about that.
Hey, I don't want to read this, but watch this.
Just drop the mic.
Totally appropriate.
So what's your
cool thing? I love you, Jeff.
I love you too, Doc. My cool thing is an app called TaskHeat. And it's for the Mac. Oh no, wait, that's not completely accurate. It's also I've owned an iPad. And it's a project management application. So if you're looking for something that you do the sorts of things with project management that you would do with the product, say like Asana or Mondays, but you don't want to use a web service for that, TaskHeat. And it's also, this is going to sound bad or mean, but I don't mean it that way. It's not as intimidating as the big task or project management platforms. They've come up with a system where you can use it for basic task management or for project management. And it's easy to figure out what you're doing. It has a really great graphical view for following all the tasks and linking them together in a project. And so you can set it up on your Mac, your iPhone, your iPad, use it wherever. And it's in set app. So Adam, like your pick, I have literally no idea how much this costs. But it's in set app. So just get set app and there you go.
I get both our picks for cheaper than buying them individually.
You know, yes. What's so amazing about SetApp? No matter how many times we pick apps out of SetApp, we can never be finished because they keep adding cool new stuff.
I know.
I was checking out Philem Pro this week. It's pretty cool. It's Pilum, not Philem. It's called Pilum.
It's amazing. Really nice, it's like Jeff. Every time I need to find an app for a specific thing that I need to do, the first thing I'll do is go into SetApp and do a search.
That's my go-to place too now.
Yeah, and odds are I'm going to find something that does what I need.
And not only something that does what you need, unlike going to the Mac App Store, you know it's going to be a quality app. I was going to say probably, you know it's going to be a quality app.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. You go to the Mac App Store, you're doing a crapshoot. It's likely going to be junk.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, yes.
This looks really cool, Jeff.
Yeah, I just discovered this a few days ago, and well, actually 2 days ago. And as soon as I started messing around with it, my first thought was, where was this like a few weeks ago when I started putting together everything for my podcast, because I set everything up for that, for making sure that I had all the tasks and everything handled. That's all in Trello, which is great. And I love Trello, but I could have set it all up in here, and then I could have had all my dependencies built in, and you know, fit, and it would create the whole workflow for me just by putting it all together into there. This would have been just so great. And setting it up in Asana felt like that was just going to be way overkill for what I wanted to do. So I wish I'd known about Task Heat like 3 weeks ago.
Very nice.
All right. Callum, where can we find you?
Yeah, so you can get hold of us and everything we do at imnmax.com. We're on all the usual socials as well at imnmax. You can drop us an email at info@imnmax if you want to, if you've got any questions. I'm at O'Hara Callum on Twitter. You're more than welcome to reach out, ask anything if you need anything, and I'm in the Slack room as well.
Awesome.
And that is imnmax.
imnmax.
Yeah. We had people that misunderstood that.
I'm MMAX. Yeah. Absolutely.
Chuck, where can we find you?
MacVoices.com is where I am, and you can find me on Twitter as @ChuckJoyner. And this has been an absolute blast. Thanks for hosting, Jeff, and jumping in at the last minute.
Chuck, you are far too gracious. But thank you. Adam, where can we find you?
Hey, you can find me at maccast.com, Maccast on the podcast app, and Maccast on all the social medias. And I concur, Jeff, thanks for jumping in and doing this, you know, since I had a day off and could actually make it. And to Chuck and Doc and everybody, thanks for the conversation. I love having it out with you guys. You're great.
I like eating breakfast with you in San Diego better, though.
Yeah, that was fun. Got to do that again. Maybe next year, hopefully.
When they let us out, I was ready to come. Yeah. And then they're like, no, stay home.
Yeah, that was sad. Doc, where can we find you?
First of all, happy birthday, Adam.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, he's old.
And second of all, you can find me all over the interwebs at DOCROCK. And of course, right now, everything is all about the live streams, which are mostly on YouTube and Facebook. So just, you know, youtube.com/DocRock. And then I'm doing the lives, teaching people how to stay connected during this time.
Awesome. And Patrice, where can we find you?
Well, I mean, they're actually letting me out. So actually outside here in Austria. But yeah, if you're online, if you still have to stay inside, everything I do is on thepatrice.com. And I also have a podcast where I still have to invite Adam to that. We have to, and Callum, we just recorded. I'm going to try to edit this weekend. So that one is coming up. It's foodieflashback.com, where we talk about food-related memories and everything that goes with it. It's a really, really fun show.
Awesome. Well,
I have a good one for you. If you get me on there, Patrice, I have something I rediscovered recently from my high school days. So
awesome. Teaser. No.
Yeah, we'll, me too. We'll set something up. Legal now. It's legal in San Diego too. I remember.
Yep. I wasn't there yet in high school. That was remember. More college, but okay.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, jgamet. And you can find me on all kinds of shows. We'll find out if you can find me on British Tech Network shows in the future. honestly, I have no idea. And then soon on my show. And actually, have I told you guys the name of my podcast yet?
No.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then this
Mountain
is
Lion
the
stock.
This is the announce. I guess the official announcement of my show. It's called That Interview Show, and launching very soon. And this is I'm excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And based on the name of the show, you can probably get some idea about what it is. So I'll say I'm looking forward to having all of you on my show.
Nice.
And, sure. And listeners Great. And viewers, thank you for joining us. And Ewan, I am so, so sorry.
Bye, Jeff, for the last time.
Yeah, it's been great knowing everyone.
All acquaintance be forgotten.